We made this.
Happy nearly new year.
Hiya, Nick.
Here we are again.
Here we are again.
Ah. Anyone else got a proper deja vu?
We're stuck in a time loop with killer robots.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Does it?
Exterminate! It will kill everything not within its own image.
Shoot.
Should old acquaintance be forgot?
Welcome to the TARDIS Crew, a Doctor Who podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Greenland.
Exterminate! Exterminate! Exterminate!
Welcome to the TARDIS Crew, a Doctor Who podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Greenland, and I'm joined as usual in my adventure through time and space by my son Ben, the biggest Doctor Who fan this side of Gallifrey. How are you doing, Ben?
I am doing very well, thank you.
Excellent, yes. Well, we're just here having watched Eve of the Daleks last night, the New Year's Day special, so it would be remiss of us if we didn't say Happy New Year to our listeners, and thank you for listening to all our episodes of the TARDIS Crew that we recorded last year. We've got some great things coming up as well this time, haven't we?
We do indeed, yes.
Yes, really excited to get into a full year of podcasting on the TARDIS Crew. I mean, it's been going so long now, we could talk about Doctor Who forever, particularly you, couldn't you, Ben?
Oh yeah, I could go until the sun burns out.
Yes, Ben has a lot to say about Doctor Who, and that's why we're doing the podcast. So today we are talking about Eve of the Daleks, the New Year's Day special that aired on, obviously, the 1st of January 2022. It was an episode written by Chris Chibnall and directed by Anita Lufer, I think how you pronounce her name. Where starring Jodie Whittaker was a Doctor, Mandeep Gill as Yaz, and John Bishop as Dan. Also stars Aisling Bea as Sarah and Ajani, I think that's how you pronounce him, Ajani Salmon as Nick as well, with Nicholas Briggs as the voice of the Daleks. So it's I think like most festive specials, it's a bit more lighter, particularly after the heavier content of Doctor Who Flux.
Yeah, by far, definitely.
So overall, did you enjoy Eve of the Daleks?
It was okay. Like, not one of my favourites, but I didn't hate it. It was just sort of there in the end.
Okay, I think I'm a bit more positive. I mean, I love a good Groundhog Day episode. You know, give me a Groundhog Day episode of any TV show and I'm there for it.
Oh yeah, Groundhog Day episodes are always good, but sometimes they do have the potential to just sort of run out of steam, which I think this one slightly did.
Maybe. I think we'll get into the detail of it. I think the ticking time clock, you know, the idea of every repeat is 1 minute less, and a bit of momentum to it as well.
Oh yeah, that was a very good idea, yeah. To it,
yeah. And you know, and obviously it's the third of and the final one of Chris Chibnall's Dalek trilogy. So have you been a fan of the Dalek episodes overall?
Yeah, for the most part, I feel like Chibnall's Dalek episodes have just kind of been there. They haven't been bad, but I haven't loved any of them. were I to rank them, it's honestly quite hard. I'd probably put Revolution up top, but that could change if you ask me again tomorrow.
Yeah, I think Resolution, the first one, was quite a nice palate cleanser after the very simple first season with Jodie Whittaker as a Doctor. There was a lot more going on in the last one, Revolution of the Daleks. I enjoyed it, certainly. In a way, I kind of think this is my favourite, because it wasn't the most complicated one. It was a nice palate cleanser after Flux. I think, even though this episode didn't really deal with any of the lingering plot threads, apart from the Daleks were out for revenge after what happened in The Vanquishers, it was a nice kind of simple story. It had a good, really good cast. I mean, Aisling Bea is great in anything, and she really was the kind of the heart of the story. I think if you hadn't had someone like Aisling in this story, it maybe wouldn't have been as effective. But I was all there for that. So in a way, it was kind of my favourite of the three stories.
Fair enough. I mean, Chibnall has gone on record saying he basically wrote this episode for Aisling. So it's not like we would have had someone else and the episode wouldn't have been propelled as it was.
No, and you can kind of tell that. I mean, it's a really good piece for her. I mean, obviously, she's a comedian and an actress. I mean, the thing I saw her back in 2019 was Living With Yourself, and she was really good in that. That was a Netflix series of Paul Rudd. But she's done a few things, really, and she's always entertaining. I thought she was really, really good in this. So definitely really enjoyed her performance in this episode. So shall we get a little bit more deeper into the themes of the story? So what did you think of the interplay between Sarah and Nick then?
Has some interesting connotations to it, perhaps a bit of stalkery behaviour, but I mean, it was nice to see and fact they got to tell each other how they were feeling over the course of dying repeatedly, up to them travelling the world at the end, which was predictable in the end that they would do that.
Yeah, I kind of, it's a weird one because I thought that Salmon's performance was quite endearing. I quite liked his performance. But there was something a little bit uncomfortable about the stalkerish undertones. The fact that he kept all his ex-girlfriend's belongings in this locker and he was lying, deceiving. And then I think it would have been a stronger ending if she went and goes, yes, you're a nice guy, but no thanks. And kind of the fact that then they went trying around the world together at the end felt a little bit like, well, I didn't buy actually Sarah liked Nick. I got the sense that actually she found him, actually he wasn't quite as creepy and weird as maybe she thought he'd been, but I don't know. It's almost like if you stalk someone long enough, you'll get the girl, and that was a really weird message, which I didn't particularly like.
I mean, a lot of Chibnall episodes have questionable undertones to them, I'd say. Not going to get into Chibnall bashing, as that's a mainstream on the internet these days.
It is, yeah. And to be honest, I think we're a bit more, I say we're a bit more positive on Chibnall in 2021 onwards. I think we generally enjoy Flux, and you particularly enjoy Flux, didn't you?
Oh, I have, yes. But having had time to think after that initial podcast, thoughts have occurred to me where I've just kind of lost faith in Chibnall at this point, and I was just kind of wanting to get to RTD2, and this episode was the first one in possibly ever I just wasn't particularly like, oh yes, there's new Doctor Who. It was just like, cool, we're getting a new episode. Although after the trailer for the next one, which we'll talk about later, I'm definitely excited again.
Absolutely, yes. Well, we're going to talk about the assuming it could be Easter special at the end of the podcast, so we'll say that for later. But yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I enjoyed Flux for the most part. I think, like you, I think, you know, the more you think about it, the more you pick a hole, the galaxy-shaped plot holes and dangling plot threads. You know, there's a lot we went into that discussion quite in depth, didn't we? So I think, you know, by all means, listen to, we've done a couple of podcasts now, haven't we? We've done our look at Jodie Whittaker's Doctor up to Flux already, if you can check that out from last year, and obviously we've done our in-depth review on Doctor Who Flux as well, so you can find out our thoughts there. I mean, generally, I think our thoughts are that Jodie Whittaker deserves better material. You know, there are a lot of missed opportunities, but there are some bright sparks there, and certainly with Flux, I think it was the Centaurans and the Weeping Angel stories that kind of really stood out. But you really liked The Vanquishers as well, didn't you?
I did, yes. But again, in retrospect, I have kind of realise more of the flaws with it rather than just the initial hype for and the fun I had with it.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's interesting. I think the idea of doing a podcast like this one, which is a straight reaction after immediately after the episode has aired, or we watched this yesterday, compared to, you know, when you sit and digest, I think... I mean, I like it when a TV show makes you think and examine, but I think, unfortunately, for some Chibnall's Doctor Who, it's you examine it and go, oh, that didn't work either, that didn't work, but there was some good stuff in there, and I think Jodie Whittaker's good. I thought Jodie Whittaker was good in this episode.
Yeah, she was okay in this episode, I think. Again, I just don't really get the sense that it's coming to the conclusion of her story, because after everything we saw in Flux, and the whole... and the whole time, this trial of revelations with Tectaeon and all that, she just kind of brushes that off, which is a common thing we see with this Doctor.
Mm.
And this episode continues the theme of Yaz basically demanding answers from the Doctor about what she's going through. And we get a hinted promise at that happening. But then at the very end of the episode, she's just like, ah, no, forget everything. It's just like, if you're going to do this storyline of 13 going to be more open, then actually do it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's really frustrating. It's very, very, very clear that Chibnall is saving those revelations and the impact of that for the Centenary Special, and that might make for a good special. I don't know. I mean, Flux has proven that actually doesn't necessarily bring everything together. But
and it could be a bit messy. We just don't know.
I think it's going to be messy, but I think it's going to be fun too. So hopefully, we're going to get Joe Martin's Doctor back. We're going to get the Sacha Dhawan's Master back. You know, I mean, this should be some good stuff in that finale. But that's for another time. I think in this episode, this one is another example of just teasing the audience and dragging them along and not really giving any kind of satisfying payoff.
Yeah, like. Again, at the end of Flux, it was just like, we got no payoff. We're basically at square one of the arc still, and we're just being dragged along here again. And it's like, we want the answers. Why should we be invested if we're not getting the answers?
Yeah, I think that is fair. I think it is becoming a bit frustrating now. And I kind of feel like Chibnall can tease some really interesting mysteries. I think the idea of some of the Doctor's past is really interesting. Don't get me wrong, I'm really intrigued to find out more about it, but I don't think there's going to be any time given to really kind of deal with that. Even the, what's it called? Thasmin,
yeah.
That's the romance with the Yaz romantically liking the Doctor. Even that is kind of, it was hinted at in Flux, certainly, mentioned more explicitly in this, and then kind of brush under the carpet. I don't think it'll even come up next episode.
Oh, it's not going to come up next episode. It'll probably come up in the Centenary, but for all the shippers of Thasmin, they probably really enjoyed that element. And I have nothing against Yaz romantically loving the Doctor. That's basically been hinted at since Arachnids in the UK. I just don't want the Doctor to reciprocate that.
I don't think Doctor's capable of doing that.
Especially this incarnation as well. It's been established, again, like, right back in... I think it was Arachnids in the UK as well. That she's not great at picking up on the social cues. A bit like Capaldi, just more socially awkward as opposed to just completely ignorant.
Yeah, I think... I don't know how she knows how to react to that. But even if she does react to that, even if she does reciprocate it, it's going to be... call up in one episode, you know, even if the next episode does kind of bring that to a head and it resolves it in one way or the other, in the next episode, you've got one Centenary Special and it's done. So there's no time to really explore that. I mean, I'm never a fan of Doctor Companion romances. I hate the Tev Doctor and Rose romance. I think it's kind of toxic. And I think it really damages both characters. And I think also Martha suffered for her yearnings for the Doctor as well.
She did, yeah. I mean, the Doctor and River is fine.
That's the one I do like. Yeah. But the River's a little bit different as well.
Yeah, different to a companion. And then, as I mentioned on the Big Finish 8th Doctor podcast, I quite liked how they went about it with the 8th Doctor and Charlie, because that was quite different.
But again, it's like Martha, it's very much one-sided, isn't it?
But here, it's like, Because to the best of my knowledge, next episode was not initially planned. Chibnall was asked to bump the centenary over to make it special for the BBC centenary, so he had to make an extra one, which I believe, based on all accounts, is the next one.
Right.
Which means I doubt we're going to get any of that arc stuff even brought up, really. Because had he already written the centenary, he would have had to write this one based around what he already had. So,
yeah.
Thasmin's just not really going to come up next episode.
I think Thasmin, Timeless Children, you know, everything that happened, even with Flux and that, it sounds like it's going to be... You might be able to layer in some kind of hints, knowing where the big finale is going. But yeah, you're not going to be able to have any big revelations if that's all coming in the Centurion special, unless he restructured it somehow. I don't know, but... It's a bit frustrating because Chris Chibnall's Doctor Who continuously teases and teases and teases and has some interesting ideas, it has some interesting mysteries, but there's never going to be enough time to resolve that. And I think, yeah, as I said, while I'm not generally a fan of Doctor Companion romances, I'm not a sort of person who ships characters in TV shows anyway, you know. I know there are people that really invest in it, and I'm great, and I think enjoy that's fantastic, but I don't necessarily see that there is enough time being done. Even with Yaz, as we kind of saw in this episode, kind of coming in terms of her sexuality and, you know, what that means of her. Because I don't think the idea she's a bit, like Bill was established as a lesbian in the world. I don't think Yaz is there. Yaz is kind of coming to terms with that. But even that is not really going to be given time to explore as well. So it's very much like hinting and teasing and showing snippets, but not really doing enough of it to really do the story justice.
He left it too late, and we're just not going to get, quite frankly, what we deserve in terms of payoff at this point, unless he somehow pulls Moffat levels of satisfaction and wraps everything up satisfyingly. But even Moffat, who I adore as a writer, didn't always manage to bring everything together, the hybrid being a good example of that.
I agree. I think it's really hard. There were too many big story threads dangling. I don't think they're all going to get answered. Like the Flux, for example. You know, my understanding is the Flux destroyed most of the galaxy. I don't think the galaxy was restored in The Vanquishers, and yet we're just carrying on as normal. So is that something we're going to pick up, or is that just going to be kind of brushed under the carpet?
If that is going to be brought up, it'll have to be centenary.
Mm.
I mean, there was a line in The Vanquishers where, as Yor said, like, they could turn back the universe to before the Flux destroyed it so they can do it over and over again. But they never explicitly stated if they actually did that.
Yeah, maybe it's going to be a one-liner just say, oh, they did do that. Not be satisfying, but...
Yeah, that's what that second Flux wave was. It wasn't actually a second wave, it was the first one again.
Yeah, who knows. Anyway, so going back to Eve of the Daleks then. So we've got the Thasmin relationship. We've got the relationship between Sarah and Nick as well, which I wasn't particularly a fan of, but I liked them in isolation. You know, I really liked Aisling Bea. I thought she had really good chemistry with the other actors. She was funny, you know, she was heartfelt, and in her performance, you know, I liked the bits of her mum as well. I was quite like, was a little cameo there as well with the mum phone calls. So I thought she really was the glue that held it together. And you could tell that Chibnall kind of wrote this for her. I would love Sarah to be a companion. It's too late now. You know, John Bishop's okay. I don't think he's at the level of Graham or Donna in terms of like kind of left field casting that actually wows audiences. Imagine if Aisling Bea had been the Dan character though from the word go. That would have really worked, I think.
That definitely would have been an interesting dynamic. Talking about Dan, he didn't really get an awful lot to do in this one, other than being the instigator to get Thasmin up and running, and that one scene where he sacrifices himself in this loop to distract the Dalek, which was a fun scene, admittedly.
Yeah, that was one of his best scenes.
These Daleks, like the Sontarans in Flux, are such bad shots. Like, they have Gatling guns. They can't hit people down corridors, running into lifts. They can't even hit Dan when he's just, like, one step next to the gun. He's just spinning round and round and round.
It was a bit of an odd one, wasn't it? Do you like the kind of machine gun element of the guns? Normally it's like one beam and done, and this one's kind of like almost like a machine gun idea.
They are executioner Daleks, so they're definitely equipped for it, which I like.
Yeah. I mean, Daleks were great. Daleks were fun. I like that it wasn't galaxy-ending Daleks. I like that it wasn't big, dramatic, you know, huge global universal stakes. I like it was basically Daleks out for revenge. You know, I think Daleks work better when they're more simple and effective. And they were very much a dangerous presence in this episode, except for the fact they couldn't shoot.
Yeah, like the Sontarans and Flux. And hey, if these Daleks are out for revenge, why don't you keep the names of this trilogy somewhat in line? Resolution, Revolution of the Daleks, and Eve of the Daleks. I'm convinced Chibnall's just trying to annoy people doing that, because you either call it Resolution and Revolution, or Resolution of Daleks and Revolution of the Daleks. And in that case, why don't you just call this episode Revenge of the Daleks? It keeps the R.
I think that would have been quite good, but he's going for the New Year's Eve thing, isn't it? I think
Eve Revenge of the Daleks. I always read that as Eye of the Daleks.
I don't know, I always find Chris Chibnall's episode titles very clunky. You know, Arachnids in the UK, and
admittedly that one wasn't him.
No, but still, either the show one. You know, even like I loved War of the Sontarans, but the actual title Sontarans, they go to war, so let's call it War of the Sontarans.
Mm.
It's very, very clunky. There are lots of very, very clunky episode titles, but hey, we'll forgive that.
Yeah, I like some more of his earlier ones, like The Ghost Monument, It Takes You Away, Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror, but then we got Flux, and they started just being a bit, right, okay.
They're very functional, aren't they?
Yeah. Even next episode's title, it's like, I mean, it makes sense, but
It's Legend of the Redacted, and we'll come to what they are at the end. But yeah, it's almost, yeah, there's nothing really kind of at two levels. It's very very, very functional. And even like Village of the Angels, it's set in a village where we've been angels, so let's call it Village of the Angels. It's like, it's so very first draft.
I think the worst Chibnall title we've got, though, has to be Survivors of the Flux.
I don't know, I think Arachnids in the UK is the worst. I know it's not his, but
I never really disliked that. I quite like Vanquishers as a title. It reminds me a lot of those 60s Hartnell stories. Like, I could easily imagine the Daleks' master plan, an episode just ending saying, next episode, The Vanquishers.
Absolutely. It's interesting, we keep moving away from either the Daleks or discussions. Is that because there really wasn't a lot to it?
I think so, in a way. It's very serviceable, functional. You get a few scenes between different characters. The Daleks are there, kind of end up repeating the same joke over and over, which was fun to begin with, but when you get about midway through and the Daleks are still like, Daleks do not have, etc., it just gets a bit like, okay, we've got the joke now. Although props to making Nick Briggs say, we are not Nick.
That was good. I did like the Dalek lines in this one as well. You know, Daleks do not have friends.
Daleks do not have managers. That was a good one during the Dan scene.
Yeah, there was some good. There was some great Dalek one-liners in this episode. Mm.
Although, surely, they had 1 minute on that last loop. I swear that took more than a minute.
Yeah.
Especially to lug things down.
Okay, let's talk about some of the positives and negatives of the episode. Let's go into some detail then. So, what are your kind of three favourite moments from the episode?
I quite like the beginning when you see the inside of the TARDIS shifting as it goes into the reset. That was quite cool with, like, doing a bit like Mirror Dimension from Doctor Strange where it's all folding over.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cracks on the outside was quite fun. Dan I quite like for what he was in there. And also that the last little cameo at the end, which I don't know if you picked up on. The guy watching the fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
It's Crane Guy from Woman Who Fell to Earth.
Is it?
Yeah, it's Crane Guy.
That's a fun little touch.
I know.
But yeah, you're right about the Dan stuff. I mean, his noble sacrifice, as much as it was because time was being reset, was quite fun. And yeah, the scene when he... Well, is it a scene when he kind of... It was a bit odd because the scene when he's talking to Yaz about her feelings for the Doctor was very nicely done. And then the next moment, he's telling the Doctor, it's like he's not giving Yaz a chance.
Yeah, he's just sort of outing Yaz. And it's like, come on, Dan. Yeah. I know you're trying to be matchmaker here, but...
Yeah, not quite sure that bit worked so well. But I thought, yeah, the Dazen sorry, Daz. Daz? Is that the companion duo?
Oh, no, that's their ship. Oh, yeah. No. I think I've seen a ship for every single one of Ryan, Graham, Yaz and 13 shipped with each other.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, it's ridiculous. I've even seen 13 shipped with Yaz's mum, which I don't want to get into.
What's that one called?
I don't even remember, but I don't want to know what that... There's First Doctor and Martha. That is a real ship.
Really? Yeah. That's weird. Okay. Not too fans. Sorry, some of you are just a bit weird.
Yeah.
So, where were we? I was trying to thought there. So, yeah, I like Daz. Dan and Yaz, I like the way they call each other by their kind of place names, you know, Liverpool and Sheffield and stuff. And I like the kind of banter between them. There's a lot of kind of sense that, you know, they've become closer because of the time during Survivors of the Flux. Don't get me wrong, I would like to have seen more of Survivors of the Flux to really establish that, but I like the kind of brother-sister bond they've kind of got on there, the kind of slight rivalry banter and Yaz's superiority. I thought, there was some good stuff there, but the way that Dan can also call Yaz out. You know, there was a closer relationship there, which admittedly we haven't seen on screen because most of it was shown off screen,
yeah.
But I like the way it kind of plays out through this episode.
It's a big Finnish spin-off waiting to happen, as we mentioned before.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, you could probably forget that for Yaz and Dan, they spent 3 years together travelling the Earth.
Yeah, I think she's probably spent more time with Dan than she has the Doctor.
At this point, yeah, especially even in this episode, Dan and the Doctor didn't spend huge amounts of time together, which didn't really in Flux either.
Now, I don't think you've really got a sense of who Dan is as the companion to the Doctor. You've got who Dan is in relationship to Yaz, but Dan is almost like Yaz's companion. Like, Yaz is the Doctor's companion, Dan is Yaz's companion.
A bit like Rory, Amy and the Doctor.
Yeah, a little bit there, but at least you've got some stuff with Rory and the Doctor. You don't really get that here with Dan.
Yeah. It's a bit like Ryan as well. Who was Ryan to the Doctor? You don't really get that other than that one scene in Revolution. Other than that, it's just a bit... Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we've done some good points there. We've talked about Dan and Yaz. We've talked about Dan's moments. We've talked about the bit at the beginning with the TARDIS cracking. Though I thought that had been resolved in Village of the Angels, but there was so much going on Flux, maybe I was confused.
I mean, they did explain why it happened back in episode 2 or 3, and this was just the, we're going to quickly fix it, which is like, I guess... Even Chibnall realised that that was one thing too many to add in Flux, and it was a plot device for a special to make the TARDIS do that, which means time loop.
I still don't... I mean, was it affected by the planet time?
Yeah, it was like the Mori being displaced in Atropos. Main time went all weird, so the TARDIS got affected.
It did feel a bit like one of the many, many, many subplots that went on that we didn't really have any sense of why it was happening. They just had to quickly wrap it up at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so we've got the TARDIS cracking, we've got Dan and Yaz, Dalek one-liners, I thought they were great. You know, I thought Aisling Bea was great in the episode as well. I thought she was really, really strong. And Nick and the two Daleks, the Ducky and the two Daleks take each other out.
That was a smart move on his part. But you could tell he was more equipped to the situation anyway, because you have Sarah being like, we're trapped in a time loop with killer robots, and he's just kind of like, okay, I'll accept that. So he knows what to do, just ducking.
Yeah. I also quite like, you know, the that penultimate time loop where the Dalek walks in and they sit there eating beef and beans. That was funny.
Oh, yes, on the sofa, the decoy loop.
Yeah. There was some fun stuff in there, absolutely. And it was entertaining. I definitely enjoyed the episode. I found the fact that time was counted down had a bit of momentum to it. I also liked that even though as an audience member you knew there was going to be another time loop, the characters didn't necessarily know that. So certainly in the earlier time loops, the sense that, okay, we think we have to sacrifice self to redo this again, but there's no guarantee that is going to happen. That was what the Dalek... But I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into that. The Dalek seemed to be very confident that they'd fixed it and this was the correct time loop and it wasn't going to reset. And so there was almost that risk there that the Doctor, the companions and Nick and Sarah were actually going to come back.
I mean, by the third loop, where like, which was, I guess, the first one where they genuinely made a sacrifice to get to the next one, the Doctor, I guess, realised that it was counting down to midnight, so Why was it just counting down to midnight, though? What's to say it wouldn't have gone past that? And how does just leaving the building at midnight kind of fix it?
All right, plot holes. let's talk about some of those as well, because there were some good performances, some entertaining moments, some funny one-liners there. Things that didn't quite make sense. Absolutely, yeah. Why was it counting to midnight? Never really established, apart from that it was. The doctor told us it was, so that's what was happening.
Even the doctor never really worked that out. She just kind of assumed.
Yeah, it felt very, very shorthand getting to that point without really having a satisfying explanation why. I kind of felt that didn't really work for me, why this was happening. I know the TARDIS created it, but then the Daleks seemed to be aware what was going on and able to adapt. But again, they didn't really explain why that was happening either.
Yeah, the Daleks could just send Daleks into the loop, but I assume that means Daleks couldn't get out of the loop.
Yeah.
And also, when Nick destroyed those two Daleks by ducking, which sounds weird with no context, but there we are, why, and then they sent three more Daleks into the loop, why did those two Daleks not then come back like the others in the next loop and make five? Because the humans and the Doctor, they all came back. So why not the dead Daleks?
Plot hole.
maybe because they were sent into the loop?
I don't know. It wasn't really a satisfying explanation for that.
Either way, even if it was because they were sent into the loop, one of those Daleks was the original one there, caught in the loop originally. Mm. So...
yeah, there were definitely more Daleks. They seemed to be aware of what was happening too. The other thing as well is that the timing never really worked in this episode. There was Sarah going, he's going to die at 6 minutes to midnight, so if I don't save him Nick this time, Nick is going to be killed for good. Okay, that's fine. Then spend 1 minute talking about it and another minute going to save him. So that's probably about 2 minutes to midnight by the time they actually saved him. So that timing didn't really work for me.
Yeah, and like the last loop being 1 minute, I don't buy
they took at least 5 minutes to go different locations and grab all the explosive and get down to the basement in 1 minute.
And then set it off and run to the door and get that open. And
that was a very, 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 very long minute.
Oh, yeah, easily. And then, like, the thing about Nick dying on that loop, okay, so he actually manages to save himself on that one, because I guess he's getting more self-awareness. Okay, so he survives to the next minute. But then I'm fairly sure in that next loop, he dies. So... surely he should have been dead by the time we got to 3 minutes to midnight.
I think we can't go that deep. I don't think the episode was deep enough to really have that.
This was probably more production error as well. But Sarah saying like her mum calling her at like I think it was the second loop, one of the first anyway. Yeah, she might have been the first one, and it was like, oh yeah, it's 4 minutes to midnight when she finishes the call, you can clearly see the phone says 23:51. That's 9 minutes to midnight.
there were things that didn't work. It's not as smooth. And I think, like Flux, there are some plot holes you can pick. Fortunately, for this episode, it's much more straightforward. It's much more entertaining and breezy. And I think that carries it a long way. And so, I don't know. I think this wasn't, you know, if Moffat had done a Groundhog Day episode, I think it would be much more satisfying. You know, you wouldn't have those plots like how would this work in this minute. There'd be a way of getting around it, a bit more clever.
Mm. Yeah,
maybe too clever. Sometimes Moffat could be too clever for his own good, but I kind of thought he would have something much stronger. I don't think Chibnall is really able to... he feels very much like second draft on a lot of this stuff. I think there are things that maybe he needs someone to look over and go, well, does that make sense? Or how's this work? And does the time work on this? I don't think there really feels like there was someone doing that for his scripts. So,
especially with Series 13 being basically just him and then Maxine Alderton on the Angel one. Although I think there's another writer co-credited on the next one we have.
Okay, that's good.
But then it's just solely him for the centenary again. But yeah. If Moffat were to do this episode, it would be a lot more complicated, less simple, but probably a lot more satisfying, and probably more fun. I didn't feel quite a sense of fun I like to get, like I had with The Vanquishers, for example. Not the most boring I've ever had, because there have been a few Chibnall episodes I've been bored out of my mind of, Suranga, Conundrum and Praxeus, not naming no names. but yeah, it was fine, it was here.
Yeah, it was entertaining, and I think that's probably all that's what we can really say. I enjoyed the performances. I enjoyed the Daleks. I enjoyed the simplicity of it, actually. I know you always said about it would be more complicated with Moffat writing it or someone else writing it. In one sense, I quite like the simplicity and the breeziness of it. It's just that the timings don't really work for me. So overall, I thought it was a decent episode of Doctor Who. Not the most groundbreaking episode, but it was fun.
I am glad this one was more simple, didn't have any existential revelations, because after Flux, that was needed.
This was definitely a palate cleanser, and I think if we talk about these, the production order, so you're saying the next episode was the one that was written and filmed after Centenary because they added an extra episode in, yeah?
As far as I can gather, because there were originally eight, and then the director of content at the BBC asked Chibnall to make the Centenary one for the Centenary, okay. So I'm assuming he then added in another one, and by all accounts, I think it's fair to say the one he's got a co-credit for, the one which isn't about the TARDIS or anything, is the standalone one, because I'm fairly sure this was to be included in that run.
So it's originally going to be six episodes of Flux, Eve of the Daleks, and Centenary Special. So you see there, it's a palate cleanser episode anyway, which is, I think, is good. Mm. It gives you a little bit kind of breathe and just enjoy the Doctor and the companions before you go into the really heavy stuff. I think if you've gone something really heavy again and then into the Centenary Special with more big revelations, because there's probably more revelations than actually answers, I think that would almost be a bit too much. Whereas I like the... I like the fact this is a palate cleanser. I like the fact it's simple and just entertaining, and you don't have to think too hard about it. If you do, you'll the timers won't work. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, next episode would probably be a palate cleanser as well,
but in a very different way. And we're going to talk about it in a second too.
Oh, yeah. Also, I think Chibnall wrote this episode in like 2 weeks. He said so. It makes sense that it does feel a bit more early draft than.
But then Russell T. Davies wrote Midnight in what, days? And
did he? I mean, I think Russell T. Davies wrote Last of the Time Lords in 4 days. And Moffat wrote Blink and the Husbands of River Song with, like, the least number of drafts for any episode. But they're superior writers to Chibnall.
Yeah. I don't know. I think 2 weeks is probably fine to write an episode if you're... But I'm not a TV writer myself.
If it was more complicated like Flux, 2 weeks would not be enough. But this, fair
it's
enough.
Fine. It needed maybe another draft on some of those timings, but I think that was all that I kind of would have preferred. So before we talk about the next episode and wrap up this podcast, any final thoughts on Eve of the Daleks?
Not really, no.
Oh, dear. That's it. I enjoyed it.
Mm. You can tell that something's probably not hugely great when most of the fandom immediately gets more excited over the next time trailer than the actual episode they've spent an hour watching.
Quite possibly, and you certainly did. Okay, we're going to move on then. So, for those who don't want to listen, you know, we're going to talk about the next episode, which the teaser, which is like 4 shots, had a reveal, which I gasped. Ben jumps up and went, yes, in the middle of the room. So you're quite excited for that.
I think you realised what was coming a split second before I did.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm excited for it because it's a little bit spoilery. So if you don't want to listen, that's fine. And thank you for listening. But for those who want to hear our thoughts on the next special, just a few minutes on there, stay on, please.
Okay. So when the trailer came on, I was like, oh, yay, we're actually getting a trailer. And I saw, just the title, Legend? I mean, okay. Oh, look, the Chinese pirate stuff, which had been heavily rumoured as this special and seen filming stuff. Okay, cool. Then it went Legend of the... Oh, okay. What are we building to? And then I saw the blurry figure and I was like, what monster is this? And then it clicked in my head and I just went, yes. Yes. Honestly. So, if you're staying on... You want to know what this is, or you know, the Sea Devils.
Yes, you have been saying, I want the Sea Devils, I want the Sea Devils, for as long as you've been watching Doctor Who, I think.
Exactly, they have been top of my return list for like the entire time, and I've also been adamant, if anyone was going to bring them back, apparently Moffat did want to, but he just never got around to it, but I was saying, if anyone was to bring back the Sea Devils, it would be Chibnall, because... He did the same thing for the Silurians with Hungry Earth and Cold Blood, and there was heavy Sea Devil rumours for Praxeus, which that episode bored me out of my mind. I really think Autons or Sea Devils, one of them at least, should have been in that. But to then see Legend of the Sea Devils and see the new design is just like, finally.
I mean, it's a very great and effective design, and it more so, I think, than Silurians.
Yeah, it looks, sticks to the roots more.
Yeah, of that 70s episode. I mean, you don't have the... I actually really like the samurai armour of the Sea Devils in Warriors of the Deep. Warriors of the Deep is not a good story by any means, but I quite like the design of the Sea Devils.
Yeah, I think that design's okay. I much prefer the one from the Sea Devils and now Legend of the Sea Devils. Also, we've got pirates. We've got Sea Devils. If they don't bring back the Murka, I riot. It would also be funny if they just didn't even update the design. It was the exact same design from Warriors of the Deep, half complete, and they just stick that in.
It's a rubbery Murka.
Yeah. With the updated Sea Devil design and the promo pictures we've seen look actually really well shot, and then you just have Rubber Boy.
I don't know. I think there's certainly opportunity to have the Murka rising from the depths at the end of the episode, and given justice, you know, the Murka is not a great design. It's one of the worst things that Doctor ever put on screen, or maybe.
Certainly one of the most iconic. And I mean, comics and audio, and I think books as well, have done justice to the Murka. Like, the comic The Lost Dimension has Murka in it briefly, and it does look really, really good. But it's just production constraints and Warriors of the Deep.
Yeah, I would love the Murka, I agree, to turn up at the end of the episode, getting the justice it deserves. But I'm all for Sea Devils. I love the design of the Sea Devils. They look very close to the original 1970s version, but in a way that's been obviously updated for the modern screen. And yes, I mean, Chinese pirates and Sea Devils, I'm all for that.
I'm not sure if you've seen the picture, which is more of a body shop. It's got sort of more like piratey clothing and a pendant on as well.
So yeah.
It's not the tattered white string vest anymore, which is fair.
I mean, who knows? Maybe this is going to be the Waters of Mars of Chibnall's one. You know, you basically had those specials and you came out of one really, really great special before the finale.
A bit like how people went, like, I've seen general consensus to Eve of the Daleks, people going, it was okay. I think people think sort of the same thing about Planet of the Dead, and then you get to the next one. Like, pirate episodes and Doctor Who. I do love pirates, but these just never gel for me. Like, all the pirate episodes on TV, and even the audios and the books. There's only been one pirate story in Doctor Who which I've actually liked, and I did really enjoy that one. Except that wasn't really actual pirates, it was badger pirates in space, but it was still piratey.
Pirates in space?
Yes. But I am willing to make an exception for pirates this episode, because Sea Devils.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think we're both really excited. I think this is probably the most I've been excited for a Doctor Who in a long time. I think, yeah, it looks great. And, I mean, there's also another writer credit, isn't it, on the episode?
Yeah, Ella Rhode. I think she's 26 or something. One of the youngest writers for the revival.
Okay, fantastic. So, yeah, exciting to see exactly what happens there as well. But yeah, I mean, hopefully it's a really good romp before the big revelations of the finale. I'm just looking at the design now of the Sea Devil as well. Yeah, it looks really good. I like the coat, but also it looks kind of oriental, but also like it's come out of the sea. So yeah, I'm really I think the design looks great. So I like the kind of the movement of the mask as well. So hopefully that's going to be great. So that's an episode we're going to discuss later on. I think also, before the, I'm assuming it's going to be Easter special.
Yeah, I just should. It says spring 2022 currently.
As soon as you know the air date, let's try and discuss the Sea Devils beforehand, yeah?
Yes, which is one of my favourite Pertwee stories.
It's a great Pertwee story. So yeah, I think we'll do an episode on the Sea Devils and then we'll go into Legend of the Sea Devils after that. But we've got a few more things before then, haven't we, as well? So what's coming up then? Well, next time we are going to be chatting to authors Andy Frankamallen, Chris Lynch and Tim Gambrell about the Lethbridge Stewart series in UNIT. So, you know, it's a series I've written for as well, so it should be a really good episode. We've got Big Finish writer Rob Valentine on the show as well. And also we're going to be looking at the animated release of Galaxy 4 as well.
Indeed we are, and as I think we've promised this in a previous one, Seeds of Doom, we're in the process of that one.
Yeah, I think we were going to do Seeds of Doom as well. It's my favourite Doctor Who story, but we've kind of had some other things we want to discuss as well. So Seeds of Doom is definitely coming this year as well.
At some point, don't worry. Yeah. The Crinoids are coming.
Absolutely, and a few more as well. We've got kind of a few more guests coming on board as well. And yeah, really excited for what we're going to bring in 2022, including our review of Legends of the Sea Devils. So, in the meantime, you can find us online at the We Made This Network, and you can find us on Instagram and Twitter by searching The Crew TARDIS. So, thanks for joining us for our latest episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS crew and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'd really love to hear your thoughts and your reviews. That'd be really appreciated. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/we made this. Doctor Who is not all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. Next time, as I said, we'll be discussing the Lethbridge Stewart series and Unit in Doctor Who. So join us again for the TARDIS crew, because somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea's getting cold.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Academy Watch.
I saw West Side Story actually the other day and I didn't really connect with it. So, you know, some I'll like and some I won't, but generally I like the idea of a musical. Disney films, the animated Disney films. Tend to enjoy them.
Of course. Are you a La La Land person? Because I was definitely a La La pet.
I hate La La Land. I just could not stand
it. Wow. We can't be friends anymore. I'm just going to, hang on. How do I turn this thing off?
Yeah. I've lost a lot of friends over this opinion, but I hate it.
Garfield is the best Spider-Man and La La Land is shit. Like, what?
I just like to be controversial.
We dig music. But yeah, just missed out on my list this year. There was the Garbage record was great, so I got head off that.
Yeah, I was surprised that didn't end up on the main.
It was close.
I was surprised to not see it.
Wet Leg, who have released two songs so far. There's another one apparently coming out
terrible
later
band
this week.
Name.
Yeah, I can't get behind it. That's what our old history teacher was called, Mr. Wet Leg. It's actually Westlake, but like, apparently he pissed himself once.
Amazing. Yeah, it's a f***ing terrible band name, but they're great.
It's like if Wet Leg toured with pissed jeans. Can you imagine?
Right in the childhood.
When I was younger, Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man looks way older than I was as a kid.
He looks older than you do now.
Way older than I am, yeah. And that was a constant thing in the cartoons as well. Like in the cartoons, like the 90s one, he looked older. Mm. And that was the cartoon I watched when I was younger, was the 90s one. And we would have done that for the show. But as soon as Disney Plus came out, I binge watched it all. And then I encouraged you to watch it.
Yeah, and I've watched
and
it
then
as well.
And then we started the podcast.
And we were like, oh shit, we should have saved it.
That should have been it. And then there was another one with Neil Patrick Harris in, which I probably did.
What, as in Doogie Howser MD?
Yeah, and, you know.
Barney Ooh, Spencer. I'm going to put that on my list.
A Doogie Howser.
Doogie Howser MD.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.